Vous avez remarqué? Les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques approchent à grands pas. Ça va être un moment génial, de fête, de célébration évidemment. Et je ne sais pas dans vos cercles, mais de mon côté, une bonne partie de mes amis parisiens préparent leurs vacances d'été et se posent la question de mettre leur appartement sur Airbnb à cette occasion. Ça pourrait financer au moins en partie leurs vacances, alors ça tombe sous le sens qu'ils y pensent. De mon côté, c'est certain, je serai à Lisbonne, donc mon appartement parisien, dont je suis propriétaire, sera sur Airbnb pour cet été, pendant les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques. D'ailleurs, ça me permettra de financer, en partie, mes vacances. Et vous? Imaginez ce que vous pourriez faire avec ce supplément de revenus. En réalité, votre logement pourrait rapporter plus que vous ne le pensez. Découvrez combien sur airbnb.fr/hôte. C'est airbnb.fr/hôte, H-O-T-E. Allez, place à l'épisode maintenant.
I don't do many episodes in English. Well, first because Vlan is a French podcast, but also because not everyone can understand English properly. But imagine the scene. You are in the French Alps with five people that you hardly know, to be honest, and one of them happens to be one of the top world photographers. I mean, this guy took the last photo of Steve Jobs for the cover of Time magazine. He took the photos of Barack Obama or Trump or any American president that you can think about. He also took photos of any superstar in Hollywood that you can think about. He worked with the National Geographic and with the United Nations. He actually won an Emmy Award for a series of photos he did for the Time magazine. He worked on movies like Homecoming or Marvel, like Black Panther, for example. And I guess, well, you want to share what that person has to say. I mean, at least I want to share what that person has to say, especially on a subject that is super important, which is the responsibility of holding a camera. Actually, when you put a picture out there, whether it's on your Instagram account or like him, like a photo that a lot of people will see, you have a responsibility. Maybe you don't think about it, but it's actually true. And Marco Grob, who is the person I'm interviewing, has many, many, many stories that you will love to hear about. I think you will love to understand his point of view regarding celebrities, regarding president, regarding portray, and also regarding social media. So I'll let you with the conversation. Allez, Vlan, c'est parti.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Marco. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks. So you're a photographer, but you also have a lot of different things that you love. So I was wondering why in the first place you went into, why did you choose photography?
Well, actually, it came into my life like almost you fall in love with a woman you meet at the bar and you didn't expect anything to happen that night. In my life, I wanted to be a musician very bad. I was very ambitious. I rehearsed a lot, but ultimately I had an experience where I saw that I don't have that God-given talent, if you want, like you would need to pursue a career and have a good time and also leave something behind. And at the same time, at the almost same place, or actually at the same place, I had access to interesting things and stole my father's camera and started to do pictures. And then the world around me reacted with saying, oh, you do this very well. And that was the first time I heard that in my life. So I thought, okay, maybe that's worth pursuing. And in that process, I definitely fell in love with it. And I never fell out since. Which is a long, long, long time.
Long time ago. You do a different kind of photos and films also now. Mm-hmm. And to me, I feel like, but it's in my mind, that a photographer is always focused in one subject. And you do both Hollywood movies and documentaries in Africa or in other countries. Mm-hmm. How can this happen? How can you do like one day Black Panther and another day another thing?
Well, I think basically at one point in my life, when I went to New York, it was like that the boy, which was interested in history, and since I was very young, I was always very interested in history and politics in general and what's happening in the world, met the man who carried the camera.
Right.
And it was really a moment where I realized that destiny, I was lucky enough that I was put in a situation where I could start to to show a picture of the world I'm living in. I know of the limitations. It's only my view of the world. It's only Marco's world. But it's carried with subjects which matter to me. There's many different subjects which matter to me in social aspects, but also at the same time, I'm a movie buff. I grew up in Switzerland. Hollywood seemed so far away. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I find myself in the midst of that process. And I must say, I really thoroughly enjoy doing this kind of work. And then you mix it up with other subject matters, which are way deeper. And I'm much more involved, my personality much more deeper. And the other side more involves more, the photographer in me and the creative side.
Mm.
And I think this change is sometimes good and helpful. I have a lot of friends. They are photojournalists. I really admire them. Most of my photographer friends are actually photojournalists. And again, I admire them deeply. And I think they have a very important role in our daily lives, in politics, in showing what's happening in the world. But at the same time, I know also it can be very daunting for people to always be exposed to the worst of human condition over years and years and years and years. And so on my end, it's not that I didn't want to do that. I was never put in the situation. I was a portrait photographer by trade. And so I was never really a photojournalist. I mean, I was a journalist. I worked journalistic. As soon as I work for a magazine, you become a journalist right away.
Yeah, right.
But it's not that I was a hardcore like photojournalist. But I know it can have it's daunting for a lot of people who do this kind of work.
Yeah, and in my case, I studied with marketing a few years back. And eventually, and this podcast was about marketing at the beginning, 4 years ago. And then I gave myself freedom to go to the subject that I was very much more interested in, which was sociology, anthropology, geography, history, and all those subjects that I love. Was it the same for you? Like, did you felt that, or did you straight begin with both words, or you felt like you begin with trading, like somehow, and then give you the freedom to go somewhere else, or was it straight from the beginning you wanted to do both? Or, I mean, it's not only both, but
no, I think it initially it was my interest in people in general. I think I'm interested in faces beyond the genetics. In every face, you see what life left behind. You see things like even social class. How they fed themselves, if they fed themselves, if they lived most of their lives in a happy or less condition. You see whether they smoke or not, and this all is all embedded in their faces, and it all tells a story. And in a weird way, as much as you want to, you can run, but you cannot hide. So your face, ultimately, if the other person is willing to look at it, will tell the story in its truth, and a lot of the truth. And if I met a lot of political leaders in my time, so I always question myself, how the hell could people vote for these people? Because it's all there. It's all almost on paper.
Oh, wow.
And very early in my life, I, already as a kid, I looked around in my universe, parents, their friends, tried to make sense of it. I tried to understand, is this all authentic? I didn't know the word yet as a kid, but that's probably what I was looking for. is this authentic? Are these people living an authentic life, and their body language, their demeanor, their what they said, the way they said it, and the tone they said it? So it kind of made me very early in my life a kind of an observer of humans, and without knowing it, it gave me that almost that understanding, which then later when I started taking portraits became very important to initially, the moment I see a person for the first time, have a very good sense of how to go through a sitting with them. And I don't know, it's a very interesting question. Why do I do both, and when did what come in my life? I think the movie thing came relatively late. I do this now for like 7, 8, maybe 9 years.
Right.
Nine years. It came, I just did a film for Disney. I did the marketing posters and everything. And then from that moment on, it's like America, you know. It's not overnight. I wished it was, but it took a while. But then it started to become very, very frequent, and I always enjoyed working on that subject. At the same time, you always you, and you have to serve those things in within yourself, which is a deeper understanding of the world, and the people, and the politics made out of these people, and so I love to do both, and it's, I don't even question. I just go to work. For me, it's not like, oh, I do this now. It's just me reacting on a situation.
But what you were describing just earlier, it to me, to have this capacity of wondering, but also looking at things and looking at people and trying to understand what they went through their faces, it demands a lot of sensibility, don't you think? So you have a great sensibility as a human, you would say that?
I think, yeah, I think that's what I initially said. I my circumstances in my earlier life forced me to probably, through the circumstance, that I wanted to make sense of the world around me, because I was not really impressed. I was not really impressed by the world around me. I thought something is off.
All right.
Something is not right. You know, but my parents were pretty happy. We had a pretty normal life. I grew up in the middle class, upper middle class in Switzerland. So what can you say? that's probably a very good starting point. And still, there was this coherent layer of something was off. And I always wanted to find out what the hell is going on here. And so it probably honed my sensibility to the point where I have to grab a situation very, very quickly when somebody walks in into the room where we photograph, mostly a room. I have to immediately make sense of, how do I do this? What's the strategy I do? Do I go close in the beginning, or do I go gently come in? It dictates actually really kind of the way I go through this shooting. And there's an example with Steve Jobs. the whole session lasted 3 hours and 48 seconds. And we did two covers and three inside pages for Time Magazine there. Now, when he walked in, I remember my assistant told me, I turned around and gave her a look like, this has to go super fast. And I often show students pictures from that shoot. So the first shot, 42 seconds after he appeared in the door, is actually the cover.
Oh, wow.
The very first frame. And then his energy level really drops one to another. Oh. So you have to feel... You have no second chances. I don't talk when people walk in. I kind of just observe. And even though he was very nice, and we had lunch after, he had time to do this, but he was extremely uncomfortable doing it. And there's even a video, you can find it online, the whole shoot,
okay,
with a timeline underneath for people who want to care about it. But it's really important for me to understand how my strategy of going through this situation. And with some people, you start further back and then move in to provoke a situation. Mm-hmm. And with him, I had to almost like in chess game, your opening strike is that to show, Steve, I'm in control, you're in good hands, and that's what we do. Now you're mine. And he reacted on that. But so it's a really interesting kind of a very exhausting actually game. I think it's super exhausting. After like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, I'm trained. It's really all your senses are with this person. And you see sometimes their hand clench like they would be on a dentist chair.
Do they?
Yeah, sometimes they do. It's all their demeanor else, they trained themselves to look relaxed, you know.
Yeah,
they
sure.
give you a smile. And smile is our first way of deception. That's the human deception, the first row of deception. And people, that's why politicians smile. If somebody smiles, you lose a lot of the information which is actually embedded in the face.
Oh.
And it almost puffs away. That all this information is almost gone. That's why these guys always smile. And I often, like, for example, when I shot Donald Trump, he would say, can I smile? I said, well, you can, but we won't print it.
Oh, wow. I never thought about a smile like that. Actually, I'm a very smiley person.
Yeah, so. you're a smiley person, but yeah. that is your nature.
Yeah.
And you can see when you can read your face, that's that's just modus operandi. You know, it's like, it's really there and it's not fake. That's who you are.
Yeah.
With certain people,
yeah, Donald Trump for sure.
you see immediately, this is his way of deception, and you have to not allow him this deception, no matter what. And my game is not to make friends with these people. I don't want to be friends with these people.
No.
My game is to get out of this. Yeah, maybe my view of this person. I admit it's always the photographer I don't say per se all of the work you do has to have a complete show a complete picture. I don't think you can. I don't think everything in one shot. To be honest, I learned then later doing documentaries. There's much more layers to things normally. I exclude Trump of this, but else than that, it's really an interesting dynamic which I enjoy thoroughly. And it's, you have to stay on the story as a journalist, you know. For me, it's the same thing. I have to stay on the story and I have to kind of illustrate the story, which then is written in the magazine with my work to the best extent I can.
So the discussion we had earlier was about the responsibility of holding a camera. Mm-hmm. And does, I guess, I don't know if it's the same actually when you do a documentary in some, countries.